WIOX is supported by the Arc Bowl and Barbecue on Route 28 in Arkville. Open Wednesdays from 5 till 10 p.m. and Saturdays from noon till 10 p.m. with slots available for men's, women, seniors, co-ed adult, and co-ed youth bowling leagues. Information at 845-586-2695 or thearkbowl.com. WIOX is supported by the Daily Star, a regional source for community news, commentary, shopping tips, local sports, and community events. The Daily Star's Total Access delivers the newspaper and breaking news throughout the day on any digital device. More information at thedailystar.com.
This is Kent Garrett, anchor of the 8:31, the weekday morning news show on WIOX, here to ask you to support WIOX as we expand our FM signal to reach more of the Catskills region. And this just in, WIOX has received a matching grant. That means that every dollar you donate is doubled. Please go to WIOXradio.org and make your donation today. Thank you.
You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the TuneIn or FM radio apps. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. And this is our 400th show.
All right. We made it.
Yeah, we made it.
That was the goal, right?
Yeah, 2010 summer, I think, or September of 2010, we started doing the radio show From the Forest 400 shows ago, plus or minus. Actually, it's probably a little more than 400, but we'll go with 400.
Lose track of a couple, numbering right. Every now and then. Yeah. Rounding errors, whatever.
Can't really count, so.
Yeah, we're from the forest.
Right. So, how's it going, John?
It's going pretty well. Going to miss a few days of the sugaring season next week. I'm going away, but hopefully somebody else will take my sap. I think Mike Porter of the Catskill Forest Association might take a hold of it and boil it down. Otherwise, it's going to have to go on the ground for a few days.
Mike's always looking for sap, you know?
I think he wants it. Hopefully he takes it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I had a good run Saturday. Saturday? Yeah, Saturday night. It poured for me in Central Ulster County. Got over 2 gallons of sap per tap, and it was quite sweet, so I was happy. But it hasn't run much since. Tomorrow it's going to pour again. It's going to run quite a bit.
Yeah, so we think. But Saturday I didn't get anything.
Yeah.
Hardly, I mean, maybe a gallon or two.
I thought about it. And are you in a kind of a depression?
Yeah, yeah, I
might be getting some cold air sinking.
Probably right. Near a stream, I might be gathering some cold air.
Yeah, that's got to be it. It matters where you are. I mean, my trees are up on the ridge, and they face south, and that sun comes up, man. I have a friend, actually, Warren. He works Ashokan Turf and Timber. He works there. He's a co-owner. And he has a heat gun, and he's actually put it up against trees on a day when it's 32 out, and they'll be up to 45, he says. The trees.
The bark is gathering the sunlight.
Yeah, conducting. Up. Is that the word? Heat. So... they get warm, and you know, my trees are in the open sunlight facing that sun, and I know my driveway, I mean, it just melts, you know. Just everything just melts, you know. It'll be 30 degrees outside, and in the car it'll read 45 easily, you know. So there you go. But so the maple sugaring season's underway. When John and I aren't on from the forest, we've been pruning apple trees like crazy. So lots of apple trees out there.
Oh yeah, all over six counties pruning apple trees. We'll be down in Sullivan County tomorrow.
Yeah, down Sullivan County, everyone's got them apple trees, and that's what the topic is tonight. Every third Wednesday, we talk to Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead from Fruitful Furnishing Sawmill and Gary Mead Gallery. How's it going, Gary?
It's going very well, Bri. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I think was I on with you last month? I think so.
You were
2 months in a row.
Yeah. No, actually, John.
No, I don't think you were.
No, John, you weren't here.
Let's say I was.
The month before you were here with your family.
Yeah.
You know, last month you were coming, and then everybody got sick.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
At the same time. So
we've been a bunch of...
You had to stay home and catch it.
My kids go down... one of my kids goes to Aniora, and it's just a disease factory down there right now.
All schools are.
Yeah. They need to just bomb it with bleach or something. It's getting out of hand.
Well... I remember in the when I was raised on the farm in the summertime, where our gate was, where the cows went in and out of the barn.
Yeah,
we had this. It was like a blanket that hung up above the gate, and we put this bug repellent or something to keep the fleas and the flies and all that off them. And they would walk through it. And I thought that would be pretty cool to have the kids walk through in the morning going to school and on their way back out.
A big Clorox wipe.
It's, you know.
Well, I there's a lot of organic stuff they could walk through. But.
I don't know, man. Maybe they're just not. I don't think they're using bleach as much as they used to. I just feel like everyone's sick all the time. I mean, I am sick. I'm good now. But it's been a good month and a half where I've been sick.
Really, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I work outside all the time, and I very rarely get sick.
That's because your kids are all grown up. They're my age.
Ryan works outside all the time.
I'm outside every day.
What do I have to do?
I go to the mill. Yeah, but I don't...
You got to start sleeping out there, Ryan.
And, you know, I don't go out to restaurants or bars, and you know, I'm not in public a lot, and...
What do you think I am?
That has a lot to do with it. Well, your kids are in public, and they bring public to you.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
I totally agree. I think that's what it is. I used to think, oh, yeah, I never get sick, and I never did. And then you have kids, and then you're sick.
Then you're sick.
So I basically will be sick until I'm, like, in my 50s. That's basically what I've come to realize.
Yeah.
And then people I hear all the time, they'll be in their 50s or above, like, I never get sick. I'm thinking, yeah. Yeah, the kids are gone.
Yeah, yeah. They're not, you know. But if I go out to a busy place or you know, something like that, you know, a day or two later, I'll have something. Yeah. You know, even if it isn't extreme, I'll know, it's damn, I shouldn't have went there. But anyway,
right.
You got to go out in public once in a while.
I'm got to let the world know you're still kicking, right?
I am quite a hermit, and I'm happy that most of the time just, you know, hanging out and doing my own thing because I have so much to do that I really don't have time to go out and you know, hang out. And, you know, I give myself way too much to do. And
well, tonight you had to get three stoves going, the trifecta.
Well, actually, there were two at the mill I fed before I went to my house.
Yes. All right. So that's five chimneys.
So when the guys
that's
are
a lot of wood.
When the guys are at the it is when the and we burn scraps from the mill. That's mainly what we heat with in the wintertime. I mean, we saw a couple of summer and over a year I might get 10, 12 logs that have hardware in them, and I'll cut them up for firewood for the big chunks at night. But during the week when the help is there, it's not as bad. But the weekends, You know, I'm manning those stoves, and I have five stoves on a weekend. If it's a cold weekend, my whole weekend is just putting wood in the burner.
I know. I always say I'm like part-time, combustion person. Yeah. Like the most I get is three. So on a rare night during this time of year, I'm doing maple sugaring. So that's one. And then I have the stove upstairs. Mm-hmm. But on rare nights when it's maple sugaring and it gets below 20, I'll put the downstairs on. And you know what? It brings me some kind of satisfaction. Well, seeing smoke come out of three chimneys. I'm like, yeah, we're getting something done.
I was just thinking about all the work I had to do to replace all that wood.
You were pretty excited when you were at my house and there was three chimneys smoking. You go, oh, my God, you got three chimneys.
I love it, man. It's a great thing.
Yeah, it is. And apple is a very good wood to heat with.
Yeah, you want some? We got a lot. We know where there's a lot on the ground.
Well, I have that stuff up to camp that I've been, we cut from last year, those trees. There's quite a pile there. There's probably a face cord of apple tree limbs we cut off.
Yeah.
And I left them in the limbs up off the ground so they cure. And, this summer I'll go through and I'll cut that up and we'll bring it over. And we smoke with the finer stuff on the top, but the bigger stuff we'll put in the wood stove and burn it. But it burns. BTUs is
awesome. One of the highest.
And it's like, the wood is so sound. It reminds me of black locust. It's almost like iron.
But it's tougher, I think, isn't it? It's so grit. Like, apple wood's so tough.
It's very tough. And I love
not just tough like straight grain. Like locust, I feel straighter grain. I could be wrong. I mean, you would know. But I feel like it'll get like around those branch unions and stuff. It's just so.
Well, it twists.
You feel it in the saw. It's one of the hardest woods when it gets dry.
Man.
Holy cow.
Yeah, you don't want a saw when it's dry.
Well, we do. A lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, dead apple wood.
When it's dead, yeah. But yeah. You're with a chainsaw. It's different.
No, no, handsaw. Most 90% handsaw.
Well, same thing. Handsaw, chainsaw. It's out.
Whoa. Wait a second. My right hand
I'm
differs.
I'm talking about milling at the mill and making boards. Actually dulls a blade is heat. And when you have a real wet log, I've had people come to me, I've had this log up off the ground for 4 years. I think it's ready to saw. And I said, well, it was ready to saw 4 years ago. Right now, I won't saw it. It's too dry. I said, all it does is fills my mill with dust, and it dulls my blade. I said, throw it in the river for a couple of weeks, then bring it in, and I'll saw it for you. But people don't understand that. You don't start the drying process until the log is sawed. You don't dry a log and saw it because it slows the process down. It takes the edge off your blade, and it puts a lot of dust in the air. Mm. The greener it is and the cooler your cuts, and the mill doesn't make near as much noise. In my dimension mill, if I run green lumber or air-dried lumber through the planer, it's a dull sounding, not bad. You run kiln dry, it's like you're putting glass through it. Mm. It's such a higher pitch. And that water is not, toning it down and keeping it, soft. It's very, very loud. I bet kiln-dried and air-dried lumber or green lumber, there's twice the noise when you're putting kiln-dried through.
Yeah.
I can be outside the mill. I can tell what they're running just by the sound that's coming from the mill. But we're talking about apple trees tonight. You guys come up, or John did last year, and who's your buddy? Is he still working with you?
No, he's gone.
He's gone. Nick?
Nick, yeah.
Mr. Nix.
And we grafted we did eight grafts, I think, up there. And they all did fabulous. And, I'm excited this year to go up I think you guys will come up one time, walk around with me just to show me what to do this spring.
Sure.
There's one by my house. I'm going to try a couple of my own. But tree grafting is, and what's the deal with, can you plant an apple seed and get an apple tree?
You can.
But it'll be.
It won't be whatever fruit it came from.
Right.
Like if you take a Macintosh apple and eat it and then take the seeds out and plant it, you're not going to get a Macintosh
right,
tree
to fruit.
Right,
because the pollinization on the flowers.
It's not true.
Whatever,
It doesn't breed true.
Right, it doesn't, yeah.
It's not like
but
it. I
if
think
they're in
peach
a controlled
does.
Environment, and that's how they make seeds in greenhouses, where they have a controlled environment, and they know that, this butternut squash is going to be this butternut squash or vice versa. But, when it's out in the open and the bees are pollinating, they're mixing because once in a while, you know, I dump scraps and seeds outside and on the bank, and I'll see something that looks like a squash growing, and it'll come out. It'll look like an acorn squash, but it'll have the inside of a butternut squash. So, and mixed, and they're still good to eat.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, you know, like you say, I know that Johnny Appleseed. I remember that story all my years, at, you know, going to school and. In the grade school especially, we even did plays about Johnny Appleseed and planting apples, but I think he was more of a grafter than he was a seed planter.
Oh, yeah, I thought the opposite. I thought he was a seed spreader.
Well, that's what he was, but it
like more cider varieties.
Yeah, it was just, you know, he planted apple seeds all over the landscape, and they do grow, but they're not, like you say, you can't plant, you know, a seed from a Macintosh and get a Macintosh apple.
Well, I just want to say something about apples real quick. You know, I grew up in the Hudson Valley, Walk Hill Valley, New Paltz, and we have orchards down there, right? Big commercial orchards. You have Dressel's Farm, for example, and Jenkins Lucan. And, you know, it's funny. Ironically, I don't remember there being as many. There are some, as many wild-grown, you know, volunteer apple trees growing in the woods or on the side of the woods or whatever. And I don't know what it is. When orchards are abandoned, they just die. I mean, I remember seeing abandoned orchards near New Paltz.
That are
and
healthy.
They would just, once the orchardist left, they just got fire blighted and just, or whatever. They just disintegrated.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because it's a monoculture. I don't totally buy that. It could be because they're semi-dwarf. And they're not as hardy to disease, right, and whatever. But up here in the Catskills, where people planted apple trees, really going back to the late 1800s, early 1900s is when a lot of these orchards were getting going. 1840s, pretty early for a lot of the Catskills.
Well, cider was a staple every year.
Yeah, but it was everywhere.
Yep.
Every rural area had cider. But for some reason, the legacy of apples is so strong in the Catskills. There are wild apple trees everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere where there's sunlight,
and you
you'll
can,
probably
you
find
can make
an apple
them into
tree.
Whatever variety of apple you want. That's the beauty of them. And
it's a really cool thing. And these are standards. Because they're from seed, they're a standard, which means, you know, they can grow really tall if you don't prune them.
Well,
so, and they're tough. They're tough as nails.
That's all I have up on, you know, my property is just wild apple trees. And, you know, all the years I've been up there and on the farm, we had an orchard that was actually pruned and grafted, you know, up above the house. And, you know, the new owner just abandoned that, basically. And I think they cut the old growth down and put seedlings in something. But, you know, they've been further ahead just taking care of the old growth. But anyway, they didn't realize it. So, you know, that's gone. But there were trees up there that had three different kinds of apples on each tree.
That's cool.
You know, back in the 30s and 40s is when, you know, when they grew cauliflower up there and Cowan owned the farm, they put that orchard in at that time, and it was a beautiful thing. We had a strawberry apple tree, and I've never seen one since.
Yeah, we have another member,
Delancey.
RC's.
They ripen in August.
They have one.
And they're done in August, and they're like a pie or a applesauce apple. The early apples you want to, you know, get for that. But you know, I'm a collector of totally wild apples, and it's a hit and miss every year. Some years we have an abundance, and you know, last year I only made 32 gallons, and I usually make 60 plus.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was able to find 32 gallons worth, and, well, that, you know, filled my shelf back up. And, you know, I always keep 2 years ahead on about everything because we have a bad year. And, you know, it's kind of tough to do when you're growing all your own food. And
we'll see how it is this year. I don't know, because a lot of them did set fruit.
Right.
But then they died from leaf diseases.
Well, it was so wet last year.
Too much rain.
It had been wet all winter.
Too much rain.
we just keep getting rain. I mean, that's just...
And the reason why fruit trees like apple are susceptible to leaf diseases with so much rain is if we trace back the roots of apples, they go back to Kazakhstan. I don't know how to say it. Kazakhstan, doesn't matter. Anyway, that area where it's dry. So the original area of an apple tree is a drier area, and then it's been spread throughout Europe, right? And they've adapted, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They only have about 57,000 genes in an apple. There was a 2010, there was an Italian-led consortium between with Washington State University, and they decoded the gene structure of a delicious apple. They found 57,000 genes. For comparison, humans have 30,000. apples have been messed with by humans quite a bit. We love apples. Humans. I would say the only other thing maybe we've messed with as much is dogs.
Uh-huh.
Right? We love dogs and apples.
Dogs and apples.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's topic is the apple tree with Gary Mead.
"How old do you think I am?" he said. I said, "Well, I didn't know." He said, "I turned 65 about 11 months ago. I was sitting in Miami pouring blended whiskey down when this old gray black gentleman was cleaning up the lounge. There wasn't anyone around except this old man and me. The guy who ran the bar was watching Ironsides on TV. Uninvited, he sat down and opened up his mind on old dogs and children and watermelon wine. Ever had a drink of watermelon wine?" he asked. He told me all about it, though I didn't answer back. "Ain't but three things in this world that's worth a solitary dime, but old dogs and children and watermelon wine." He said, "Women think about themselves when menfolk ain't around, and friends are hard to find when they discover that you're down." He said, "I tried it all when I was young and in my natural prime. Now it's old dogs and children and watermelon wine. Old dogs care about you even when you make mistakes. God bless little children while they're still too young to hate. When he moved away, I found my pen and copied down that line about old dogs and children and watermelon wine." I had to catch a plane up to Atlanta that next day. As I left for my room, I saw him picking up my chain. That night I dreamed in peaceful sleep of shady sunshine. summertime of old dogs and children and watermelon wine.
Hi, I'm Kent Garrett, inviting you to catch the 831 every weekday morning on WIOX for local news, weather, sports, time checks, and the occasional commentary. Catch the 831 with Kent Garrett, Monday through Friday mornings on WIOX Community Radio. The 831. It doesn't leave the station at 831. It's on the station. Let's meet here then.
WIOX is supported by the Columbia Green Media Hudson Valley 360 multimedia website for news and event information, including video and photo galleries covering the Hudson Valley and the Catskills. HudsonValley.360.com. WIOX is supported by the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or DelawareCounty.org.
All right, this is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John, talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is the apple tree with Gary Mead. Gary is the owner of Fruitful Furnishings Sawmill and Gary Mead Gallery. We talk to him every third Wednesday. So, the apple tree, Gary. What do you think?
I love apple trees. I love all trees, actually. And apples is one of the ones that, I mean, for many, many years, all trees have done us, not favors, but they're supportive of our needs for furniture and whatnot. But the apple tree it's a food staple. It was for many, many years. There's, Hubbell's put that 200-ton press in their mill back in 1867, I do believe. And there's talk about in the fall of the year, from September to the second week in November, that there were cars lined up along the highway outside the mill waiting to get their apples pressed. And they actually, Hubbell's pressed over millions of gallons of apple cider. And I remember everybody back then when I was a kid growing up, everybody had a barrel in their basement full of apple cider because, you know, it was a staple in the fact that it kept you from getting rickets. There's certain, you know, even but the problem with, fresh cider is the bacteria and the yeast in it start working it. And the shelf life of fresh cider is about a week. Unless they pasteurize it, then it might be 2 weeks or three maybe at the very most. And it still starts to work. And it'll turn into alcohol. And that's why I boil it. I kill the yeast and the bacteria. And, you know, I drink apple juice every day, fresh apple juice. And it's like biting into an apple, but it's a liquid. As soon as it hits your tongue, it's like, oh, my God, that tastes just so good. It's like a fresh apple. And Bob Hubbell always told me, he said, you know, your apple juice is the closest to fresh cider that I've ever tasted. And, you know, every year when I made it, I bring him 6 or 8 gallons leave them off with him. But I don't know of anybody else that does that. And, you know, I like to boil off 60 gallons a year. I make, apple cider vinegar, which is, I made a batch 2 years ago, and it's the best apple cider vinegar I have ever tasted. I brought it to the Hubbell Cider Mill, and they tasted it, and they said, Rudd was surprised. I mean, it's very, very sour almost. It's like tastes rich. And, you know, they had some apple cider vinegar, and I tried making it again, and it doesn't taste the same as that one batch. That one batch came out beautiful. So then Rudd told me, he said, you know, the best hard cider I ever made, I don't know how I made it either. It just happened to come out that way.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things. Well,
if you're not using the same yeast, you'll never get the same.
Well, the mother is in the the jar, and you just add apple juice every year.
No, but I mean, like, even so, well, there's other yeast in there, and if you don't, like winemakers, the only way they can get the same wine is to kill the yeast with sulfites and then add their own yeast, and then you can get, you know, the same,
right,
pretty much the same quality, you know, product every year. It's hard, though. Otherwise, it's farm cider.
Right.
And there's always different yeast, I would imagine, on the skins of apples and everything else.
Yeah, and that depends on the year and how much water we had and how much, how dry it was and the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I just figured I'd leave them. I had 15 gallons after I made that super stuff 2 years ago. I put, you know, 15 gallons up because it was a good apple year, and I tested them this fall in October, about the middle of October. It didn't taste anything the same, so what I'm going to do is leave them in there, because the other one was in the jar for 2 years, kind of cooking or doing. So I'm leaving it in there for another year. You know, I have plenty of it. I think I got 12 gallons the last of the good stuff. I'm probably down to 6. I started thinking, oh, I'm a master at apple cider vinegar making. I started giving it away, and I said, holy smoke, I shouldn't have gave so much away. Because now I realize
can't replicate it.
I'm not the apple cider vinegar guy I thought I was.
I'm not a big wine guy, but I made some maple wine this year, and I'm starting to drink a little bit of it.
Just from the sap?
Well, kind of. I took the sap because remember I had last year I had appendicitis.
Right.
You know, God. Could have died. Imagine they don't operate on it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But this time last year I had appendicitis, so I still had a tap out. I left one tap and took all the others down, and I took that sap and just put it on the stove. Mm-hmm. You know, to get moisture in the house anyway. I had to do that anyway. So I boiled it down until it got a potential alcohol of 13% or more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then that's it. I put it in a jar and put a fermentation lock on it, and then one didn't come out so well. Didn't ferment. Don't know why. Probably didn't stir it. My yeast could have been dead from the get-go.
So you boil it and then add yeast.
Yeah, yeast.
Because you kill the yeast when you boil it.
When you're boiling, it's dead. Yeah. So there's no way around that with sap, right?
Right.
So, then I added the yeast, which I come to think of it, I think my other yeast was dead because I was cheap and I didn't want to buy new yeast, and I think it was old.
Yeah.
But it has a nutty flavor, man. It's like a nutty flavor that with maple flavor as well. A nutty maple flavor. It's damn good.
Yeah. It's like 12% alcohol or something like that.
Again, I'm more of a sour mash whiskey guy.
Right, yeah.
But, I like bitter alcohol.
Well, I have some hard cider. I've made hard cider for years and years. And at the end of the season, before I filled a barrel back up with fresh cider, I would pull out what was left in it. And just put it in gallon jars on the shelf. And every once in a while, I have about 30 gallons of hard cider down. I have no idea what they taste like. Or some of them might have turned into vinegar. I don't know.
I don't know.
I always want to go down there and test them one day. But, you know, Mitch and Matt, like 2 years ago, they said, oh, Dad, we're having a party. We want to bring a gallon of your hard cider. Went down to the basement. I pulled a gallon up, poured it in a shot glass. We took a hit, and I said, holy smoke, this is vinegar. Actually, it was very good vinegar. So I went down and I got another one, and this stuff was almost clear. It was a very, very light color. And we poured some out of that and took a shot of that, and it was just as smooth. It was almost like drinking water. It was, it had a back taste of honey, because I always put 25 pounds of honey in 50 gallons of apple cider, you know, fresh cider, and let it work. And around Christmas, it was my favorite because it was like apple champagne. It was bubbly, and you drink it, and it would make you burp like beer or soda, and it was just like awesome.
Well, coincidentally, Bob Hubbell got me into making cider. I tasted his at a party back in 2007 for Maple Producers at Mike Porter's. And he said, oh, you know, I add about 2 pounds of sugar per gallon of cider. Add a little raisins. Okay, so I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. But I tell you what, if you get hungover on apple wine, we came up with a new saying called apple palsy.
Apple palsy.
I never felt I wanted to cut my head off the next day.
Oh, no.
That was a long time ago. That's what happens when you drink too much hard cider, man. Oh, my God.
It'll get you, and you don't realize it because it goes down so smooth, and then you go to stand up, and you go, uh-oh.
Yeah. It's such a fog. It's such a different kind of intoxication.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man.
But, you know, it's good in small doses.
Sure.
It's medicinal.
Right. Yeah.
So, Gary, have you ever milled applewood on your mill? Have you ever sawn it?
I have not. I've never got a solid apple log in. When the trees get older, they die. The ones that aren't dead, nobody wants to take them.
Gary, we found you a tree.
You did?
Yeah, right in the village of Margaretville.
Is it dead?
No.
No, it's alive.
It's alive, and it has a saw log in it. I'm not going to say where it is on the air,
but
it's very close to you.
And you're taking it down?
We could. The landowner is a member of the Catskill Forest Association. And we could ask him, and I'm sure he'd probably do it.
He might.
He didn't even know it was there. We didn't even know it was there.
I know. We've been walking by it for years, and we're like, holy cow.
That's an apple tree?
Years
that's
ago.
That's a saw log.
Years ago, I lived on Bull Run. I lived up Bull Run and a small house across the bridge. Above me was Eddie Gray. He lived in a house above me. And there was an apple tree on his lawn. I swear it must have been 18-inch diameter, and it was solid. And I kept, for years and years, I looked at that tree. And then I moved away, and I guess I didn't go up Bull Run near as often as I should. And I drove by one day, and he said, "It's gone." And I was like, my chest
torn,
collapsed. Oh my God, it's gone. I almost lost my breath. I said, son of a gun, it got by me. But that would have been a beautiful, and whoever took it down, I don't know why they cut it. But
most apple trees are
hollow.
This one, I bet you, if there was any tree that wasn't hollow, I would say this would be the best contender.
Because
it's healthy, straight, growing like a tree.
Yeah.
Not an apple tree.
I mean, it doesn't fork or branch or anything. It just grows straight up 15, 18 feet in a single log.
Did any cutting on it?
We didn't do anything because it was too big.
Right.
We wanted to experiment with a bark graft on it and just to see if we could do it on something that large. But that would have been the reason to cut it down.
But then we were like, no, Gary might want it because it would be like such a waste. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is the apple tree with Gary Mead.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me. Can't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you
in a
minute. All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Every third Wednesday, we talk to Mr. Gary Mead from Fruitful Furnishing Sawmill and Gary Mead Gallery. And tonight we're talking about the apple tree.
We're talking about the apple tree, all right. We're going to, in a little bit, I'm going to read a poem, People and Trees. And I discovered, I think Hoppy Quick sent me this link, that there was a picture of the growth rings of a tree and a fingerprint right next to it, and they are so similar. So actually the poem I'm reading tonight, I have to add one more verse about how similar our fingerprints and the growth rings of a tree are. I just never realized that before, but apple is one of our trees that are absolutely wonderful. There's so many, like Ryan said, wild apples that just grow out there, and when you graft them, you can turn them into any kind of apple you want. Last spring, when we grafted the trees on my property, we have one tree that has four varieties of apples. And John, that was, I think that one was about probably 14, 16 inches at the base.
Yeah, that was a good size.
And it
came
up and it branched off right where it needed to go. And you know, we grafted onto like 2 or 3 inch round diameters. We put like
bigger than that.
Six or eight chances on each one.
Yeah.
And they all grow, by the end of the summer, they grew about 2 feet, 18 inches to 24.
Nice.
And I'm just going to see how they are this spring. I know you guys had stuff you could tie them up with bamboo and kind of hold them from winter. But
it's free. Yeah, we have them. It's yours for the taking.
I don't think we had a bad winter that way where ice was clinging on stuff and wrecking it so far. So
last year was bad for that.
Yeah, well, it's not over yet. So
no,
while you're thinking of it, come to the office and grab some from us, Gary.
It's not over yet.
No.
But I even thought maybe if I put just a piece of nylon string around them so that they can't spread, that would even work.
Well, last year was bad because in April we had snow, remember?
Well,
so we were grafting in
March,
the snow.
March and April was winter last year.
Yeah, it was.
Very, very hard on our landscape and our apples here.
Yeah.
And a lot of fruit. But
yeah.
It didn't affect the black caps, but it did affect the blackberries and our apples. And I don't think the apples were affected from that weather. I think they were affected by the wet summer that we had. And because my tree by my house last spring had flowers, and
they set fruit, most of them.
It was loaded with apples.
Yep.
And all summer long they kept falling and falling and falling. And next month I want to, you know, talk about photosynthesis and the importance of leaves on trees and what they do and how they, you know, they don't only create food for the tree, they create other things. And it'd be good to go into detail, because not many people realize how, you know, how powerful just a leaf of a tree is. It's pretty amazing what that one little thing can do. And we're going to go into that next month. We'll have time to mess around, kick the ideas around, and get some facts and go into that. But my second tree book has one of those facts in it, so. And I actually had I took an ad out, first paid ad I think I ever took out in the Catskill Mountain News this week, for, because my business is changing and, you know, my whole life is changing pretty drastically right now, that I want to advertise to the local people about what I'm doing and how things are going. And I've been 40 years having the company Fruitful Furnishing, and title of the ad is A 40-Year Love Affair, and that's basically what it has been, and I love trees, and I don't care how...
I didn't think you did.
Well, I've yet to get...
Surprises me.
Every time I get angry at one, it rewards me somehow, and... the reason I said that, there were a couple of logs that I was sawing that I was completely, you know, upset with, because I couldn't debark them. They wouldn't spin the debarker, and it just slows production down. And when you're trying to, you know, create a dollar during the day, you have all these obstructions. And, you know, I ended up having to bring it to the power washer and power washing it off. And, you know, when I get it up to the mill, and Then I'll saw a board off, and I go, holy smoke, man. I just got rewarded. And actually, I got punished for being angry. Because what I got out of this thing that I had to spend a little extra time and a little extra care with was absolutely mind-blowing beautiful. So, and that's why I'm excited to saw an apple tree, because the small pieces that we've got and the little limbs and the, you know, I've carved different little sticks and you know, staffs and walking sticks out of them, and they're so strong. But the white wood, it's like a cherry. It's a very purple wood. It's a lot darker than cherry, but the sapwood is white, and it's such a beautiful contrast. So I'm very excited to you know, if anybody has an apple tree that died on their property, I will buy it from you, and I'll come and take it, and I won't wreck your land. I will very carefully come and take it, clean up the brush, whatever you want. But, you know, I've yet to saw an apple log and dry it and make something out of it. And it's so beautiful. I've seen furniture made out of it, and it's absolutely stunning. I mean, it's like, it's almost like red cedar with a little pizzazz to it, because it's so much more deep purple than the red that cedar has. And but it is beautiful. And if you have apple trees and you want some work done on them to revive them and make them worthy again, you know, call the forest guys. They do a fantastic job. They'll show you how to do it, and once you learn, you can do it yourself. And I'm sure. I mean, you guys must do 1,000 trees a year, don't you? Are you
up to counting?
Huh?
Who's counting?
Mr. Nix was counting.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and these trees, a lot of them are so big they got to be climbed with a harness and a line.
That big? Huh?
They are. They're big.
Oh man, there's one in New Kingston, or not New Kingston, in Bovina that we did this year.
Oh my god.
Biggest apple tree either of us have ever seen. Definitely the biggest one I've ever seen.
That was the biggest.
Really? I mean, I don't know, 30 inches in diameter maybe.
This was in an orchard?
Yeah,
an old farm orchard, yeah.
No kidding. But it grew squatty, so in the past it must have been trimmed before and pruned.
No, it was tall, man.
It was tall now. Man, was it tall. I definitely needed a climbing line for that one.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Huh.
We counted. There was at least 5 large trees that made up that tree.
Yeah.
That's how we pruned it. We had to treat each leader as a tree.
Really?
It was amazing.
They're kind of like apple trees are when you first go up and climb in them. They don't want to be climbed in. If I'm going to anthropomorphize, you know, an apple tree, they will hit you in the face. They will whip you. And when it's cold out and that whip hits you right down the nose, you want to cry like a little baby.
I got a scabby nose from that yesterday.
Well, it hurts.
It hurts. But once you get them pruned, then they're actually the nicest tree to climb around in. But at first, man, they will hold you there. They will stick you in the eye.
Every fall, I deal with it. I go up and, you know, I shake them on the ground. And, you know, sometimes I put a tarp down. Sometimes I don't. But getting up in them is, I mean, you squeeze through and there's so many little shoots that grow off. It's like trying to get through a fence.
It's just one big, it's a wrestling match.
And you wrestle and you go up through. And, you know, I had a guy watching me do it one day and he goes, God, why do you put yourself through this? That looks painful what you're doing. I said, I'm addicted. I need apple juice. I have to have it. I have to have my apple juice. And I said, it ain't so bad. I'm coming down out. It's not as hard as going up.
You know what's the worst is wild pears.
Wild,
and I know the ones that you take up on the mountain there.
They grow.
Those are thorns.
Yeah, they are thorny. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
They're not true thorns, but they might as well be.
Right.
Sharp.
Yeah.
They are sharp.
So you have a poem?
Yeah, I do. Let's go.
Yeah, we're running out of time here. Believe it or not.
We are. Fastest hour of the month.
Yeah.
But anyhow, this is People and Trees. I wrote this back in 2015, and if you realize. Well, maybe next month I'll add the last verse of this or another verse, and then I'll read it again to show you what I mean. But this is called People and Trees. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Soils of the earth outstanding, for us both life-sustaining. Sweet, fresh air and the atmosphere, that with trees we also share. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Grand yellow ball high in the sky, sharing together, needing sun to survive. Water in rivers, streams, and the rains, hydrating us both, flowing in our veins. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Both have roots deep, standing firm, traced back thousands of years. Realized both in years of age by calculated scientific measurements. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Some may look almost alike, never too exactly the same, like every snowflake or drop of rain, boulder, stone, or grain of sand. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. We both will get old and die, going back where we started from, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, a very strong force inside both of us. People and trees are much the same, living in harmony for many, many years. Sometime while walking by a tree, say to that tree, "You are a lot like me." Living for each other every day will secure our bond and harmony. And that's my poem for this evening. And I thank everybody for listening and being friends with our trees. We have an enormous wealth of where we live in our mountains. And I was so, and you know, they were talking about what, your 400th show. I think this is my 70th show that I've done with you guys. So, you know, I've become a regular on here, and I like the fact that I'm out and about. And you know, I was in Oneonta one time, I was at the checking out, and I was talking to, you know, somebody in line. They go, "You're the guy from the radio." I said, "What?" "Yeah, we listen to that every Wednesday night." And I said, "Yeah."
I had that happen in Dutchess County.
They
one time.
Recognized my voice. I have it happen in Freshtown quite often, and you know, I'm in line or something. They go, "You're the guy on the radio." Now I have a face to go with the voice.
Mr. Mead. Yeah. Well, we're running out of time. I just want to put a plug in for next Wednesday. We're going to be talking to, I think, Mr. Peter Patokas. He's from Western New York. He's going to talk about, you might not know about this one, Gary, the Eastern Hellbender. It's a huge salamander. I never even knew about this thing. Did you, John?
They're not the spotted?
No, it's huge. Big, really big.
I'm excited to learn more, though. I don't know any details.
So one of our members called up a few weeks ago.
Where have they been
spotted? They're in the Chesapeake watershed of New York, I think.
All right.
Could be wrong. But one of our members, he listens to the show, and he's like, "Hey, man, you got to talk about this Eastern Hellbender." I was like, "I don't even know what you're talking about." But I'll look it up. And I did, and I was intrigued. So this guy's going to come on, talk about this strange salamander that's the size of a small dog. And, yeah.
So
it's big, really big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if everybody hasn't been to Hubble Cider Mill in the fall, just go watch it operate. It's the most amazing. It was installed, 200 tons of pressure come down. People don't realize that, how much pressure that is. That's a lot of pressure. And it's an old scissor press installed, I think, 1867. So it's one of our most antique running cider mills.
Yeah.
I think it's the only one that old that's still
only
in operation.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't even begin to try to find another one.
Yeah,
but
it is pretty neat.
The family kept it up, and it was one of Bob's favorite things to do. In the fall of the year, it was just like he loved making cider and pressing apples. And
he was all about it.
The boys and the family kept it going, and I'm so proud of them and so happy that they did. I was getting nervous when Bob, you know, first started getting not feeling so well, and thinking I was going to lose my 40-year contact. And, you know, I thought maybe they'd shut the place down, but it's only getting bigger.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Well, that's all the time we have on From the Forest. And all right, see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Peace.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his.
You are listening to WIOX Roxbury, community radio in the Catskills at 91.3 FM. And from the Catskills to the world at WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by Pico Moose Restaurant on Route 28 in Big Indian, featuring farmhouse cuisine prepared with locally grown ingredients and a growing wine and craft beer list. Open for dinner Thursday through Monday at 4 p.m. The Pico Moose Tap Room and Lounge serves food and drink until midnight Friday and Saturday. Reservations and information at PicaMooseRestaurant.com or 845-254-6500. WIOX is supported by the Slider Agency on Main Street in Margaretville, a neighborhood independent insurance agency educating consumers about the hazards related to uninsured drivers.